So, last week, we were going over the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, 10 spheres of nothingness, 10 and not 9, 10 and not 11. So, what does it mean, 10 and not 9? If we say that Keter, that the tenth, the highest of the sephira, the most primal sephira, which is the Ein, it is the feeling of nothingness. So if we go back to the very beginning of the introduction to Mishnah 1, we talked about the meaning of Ein in God. How does such a thing come about? If God is, then Ein is not, can't exist. There is nothing in God which is not. I mean, our fundamental belief, that which underpins everything that we think about God, is that God is one. God is the simple one. God is. Even the word existence already is too much complexity. God is. So, there is no Ein, there is no nothing, there is no emptiness, hollow, or void. So, in the Psicha to Mishnah Aleph, in the introduction, we talked about the idea that God decided to have a desire. We call that the Ratzon HaPashut, the simple desire. The corollary, what happens if God has, when God has a desire, is that there is an experience of a feeling of emptiness. That's the meaning of desire. I want something, therefore I acknowledge that I don't have that thing. I'm going to get it, maybe, but I want it, and I don't have it. So God saying, I want, means God saying, I don't have. That experience of I want, we can feel that, we can all relate to that as a feeling of emptiness in the gut. In fact, perhaps now is a good time just to mention that this idea of the emptiness inside, that feeling of emptiness inside, that is what we call the God-shaped hole, that there is something inside every creature, particularly humans. I can speak as a human, so I can't really speak for a squid or a horse, but I know that as a human, that there's an experience of an emptiness. And very often that it's a painful feeling, and I have tried to fill it with one thing or another, but you know, growing up is the realization that is existential, that feeling of something missing is part of who I am. And as we'll be learning, in fact, not only is that part of who I am, but that is the expression of God in me. When I am feeling that feeling of emptiness, I'm experiencing what I call the God-shaped hole. Right? This God is missing there, and yet that feeling of God is missing there, that is as close as I can actually come to the experience of God in me. That when I feel God in me, I'm not going to feel this as an effusion of light and joy and so on. I am going to experience it as that feeling of something deeply, deeply missing. And that is an enormous painful feeling. It can be an exquisite feeling also, but really there are many layers to the feeling. In fact, exploring the God-shaped hole is a spiritual practice, because it's about exploring the longing that is there deep down to be connected. And sometimes the only way we can connect to God is by really experiencing the fact that we are not, that we are disconnected somehow, that we are not in touch with, and that we long for. And those feelings of longing are in fact the worshipful feelings that are deep down inside us. So to bring it back, in the Psicha, in the introduction to Mishnah Aleph, we says that we said God experienced or experiences or desired this feeling of desire, that simple desire. And so if what it actually means in a certain sense is that God had a desire to have a desire. And that's what we call in the Kabbalah the Ravo Deravin, the desire to have desire. Later on we'll be talking about this moment in time which is called the Ravo Deravin by the Hasidim. There's a big inyan of really getting in touch with your soul in the last minutes of Shabbos in the third meal. Because cosmically, if we think back, like when was, you know, if the 6 days of creation began, then what preceded them? Of course, nothing preceded them in time, really. But if we were to think of a theoretical precession to creation, it would be some cosmic Shabbos that existed before creation. So the very last moment of that cosmic Shabbos would be the moment of the Rava Deravin, the desire for the desire. Right, the desire sets off creation, but there's a desire to have the desire, so that precedes the creation. So that's the last moment of what comes before creation, so that's the last minute of the supernal Shabbos. So every Shabbos, the last moment of Shabbos, is a mirror image of that divine desire to have a desire, to have a desire. And though, so in the last minutes of Shabbos, everybody can really mine that feeling in themselves, because we mirror God in that sense, that we all have inside us a spark of the Ratzon HaPashut, the simple desire. So now, if we bring it back to what we were saying last week, if God's desire is just God wanted to experience desire, right? So God has says, I want to feel what it is to want. Sure. So God feels it. What's it got to do with us? We're not really there. Our faith stipulates that God wants us. You see? If God wants us, then the feeling is not satisfied until we exist, right? We too have desires. We are designed to have desires, and so the desire doesn't stop. It's continuous. And so Keter becomes part of a chain of desires. The Ein is then connected to all the other desires that make up who we are. And so therefore there are 10 sefirot, because Keter is not disconnected from everything else. It's a part of. On the other hand, the second statement of the Mishnah was that there are 10 sefirot and not 11. And the way we explain that is, if we were to imagine that God's desire is for fulfillment. On the one hand, we said we could imagine God's desire was for desire, period, right? Which case we're not part of that. It's just infinite desire that gets deeper and bigger, okay? Now, let's say no, God really wanted to have fulfillment, right? So God's purpose is to have a desire in order to get what he wants, right? So then there's the idea of God fulfilling his desire, in which case he got what he wanted, right? It's over. The idea of the fulfillment of desire, that is an orgasmic kind of feeling, right? That building up towards the fulfillment of a desire, then it's orgasmic, and then bang, it's finished, it's over, right? Oh, you want another desire? Okay, but that's something else, right? So then the simple desire has changed from God wanting us to God wanting something that is going to end the desire. See, God's wanting us is an endless desire, because we're endless. We go on, human beings go on, time goes on, the world goes on. There isn't anything written into the original blueprint of desire that says it's going to end or be fulfilled. It's just what it is, right? But if I say that God's desire is to be fulfilled, then that orgasmic moment is also part of the picture, in which case there will be 11 sephirot, because the sephirah of dat will be permanently there in the count, because that's the meaning of dat. So therefore, the Mishnah says, no, there are 10, not 9, 10 and not 11. Then the Mishnah says, all right, what are you going to do with this? The Mishnah says, Havein b'chachma. So this is footnote number 28. Understand with wisdom. This is the very first command in Sefer Yetzirah. Lahavin b'chachma. So there's an interesting Gemara in the Masechta Tumit. It says, Alexander the Great, he had a dialogue with the sages of the Holy Land. There were a number of things that they answered him, and there were some where they kind of waffled, because he asked them some really good questions, and they were afraid that if they answered honestly, then he would start to ask them basically Sefer Yetzirah, right? He would ask questions about, you know, okay, so you told me about God, so what comes above, what's before? Then he asked them, Idin Miskeri Hakim, who should be called Hakim? Because he's coming from Macedonia, you know, his Rebbe is Socrates or Aristotle, I forget, you know, like he's grown up in the world of philosophy, right? So he's heard about the sages of the Jews, who are not philosophers, and I'll ask them some questions. So one of the questions is, who's a Chacham? Who has wisdom? So they said, Omrele is a Chacham, you know, who's Hadroyas Hanoilet? He who sees the consequence, he who sees what's going to be born of the action that he does. Kmodat Omer, you know, there's a pasuk in Tehillim in Psalms that says, Reshis Chachma, the beginning of wisdom, Yiras Hashem, is the fear of God. There is an idea of Chochmah being associated with fear, right? And we have said many times already, the idea of fear comes from an awareness that there is a future. If you don't know, if you can't conceive of there being a future, you can't have fear, right? And we are all afraid because we don't know what the future holds. So David HaMelech, in his wisdom, puts it together as Reishis Chachma. The fundamental building block of Chachma is Yiras Hashem, is fear of God, because, you know what? You have God in your future, right? She'inin Chachma hergesh yesh asit. So Chachma is inextricable from the feeling that there is going to be a future. Ve'inin HaBina, what is the essence of Bina, understanding? Hergesh sheyesh zman, the concept that there is such a thing as time. It's not the same thing as future, right? A cat can look at the building on the other side of the street and say to itself, can I jump there? If I jump, like I know I jump, can I see myself landing on the other roof? No. No, I'm going to look for somewhere that's, this building is closer to that, right? An animal, an intelligent animal, can conceptualize future, right? But Bina isn't the concept of future, it's the concept of time. Past, present, and future. Or a concept of a dimension. You see, you know, when you throw a stick in the air and your dog jumps up and catches it, snatches it out of the air, there's some very complicated mathematics, or if not mathematics, calculation that went on in the dog's brain that made its mouth exactly there where that stick fell before it hit the ground, right? I mean, there's something that would be very complicated for a computer to figure out, right? It's not simple, right? On the other hand, does a dog have a concept of time, per se? Not so easy to say, right? So the idea of future, the idea of time are not the same. Let's call the idea of future as being Chochmah, and the concept of time as a linear thing, or as a an axis along which we travel, let's call that Bina. We find that in the Torah we say, Umibnei Yisachar, and from the children of the tribe of Yisachar, Yoidei Bina Le'itim. The Torah tells us they were Yoidei Bina Le'itim. They understood, they know Bina for time. And Lodas Mayas Yisrael, to know what Israel will do. And the Medrash says, why is the tribe of Yisachar so associated with time, the Bina of time? Because it was from the tribe of Yisachar that 200 heads of the Sanhedrin came, and part of their job was to know how to calculate and fix the Jewish calendar in ancient times, so that Pesach would always come out in the spring, the first moon after the spring equinox, and so on. I mean, it took a lot of complicated astronomy and geography as well. I mean, people really had to understand the earth and the land, and it required an understanding so that you didn't end up with having Yom Kippur on a Sunday or a Friday. You know, if you had Yom Kippur on a Sunday or a Friday, that would be catastrophic. The calendar had to be really worked out very exactly. And the head of the Sanhedrin was the one who decided what day is going to be Mekudesh, what day is going to be sanctified as Rosh Chodesh. And by tradition, 200 of the heads of the Sanhedrin came from the tribe of Yisachar. It's interesting that the tribe Yisachar was born the night that Leah, where he was conceived, the night that Leah went out to Jacob and she said to him, tonight is my night. And he said, no, I'm going to Rachel. She said, no, I bought you from Rachel. I've hired you for the night. And because Rachel had seen the jasmine or the mandrakes or whatever it was that Reuben had found, and she said to Leah, please give me them. And Leah said, well, if Yaakov can be with me tonight, then you can have these flowers. And they agreed. And that was the night that Leah and Jacob actually became true soulmates. And that was the night that Yisachar, he was the child who was born 9 months later, and he is the one who really knows what to do. That's what the Torah tells us. The pasuk there in Chronicles said, and from the children of Yisachar who know the Bina of times, ladat, to know, ma yase Yisrael, what Israel should do. You know, the idea of being the chronologist, the idea of knowing when and how to fix the calendar, isn't simply mathematics, right? That wouldn't require the head of the Sanhedrin. That would require a good mathematician. The essence is to know what to do next. That is a groisa chachma. That is a very deep wisdom. And that was something that comes through Leah. She knows exactly what to do next, right? And she just happens to walk out when Jacob is on his way home, right? She doesn't go to the tent where he is and say, she actually meets him on the way. How did she know? The Medrash says that the donkey started to bray on its way home. And so that told her that Yaakov is, you know, on his way. And she went out to meet him and deflected him, and he came to her tent. And that's why it says in the end of Genesis, when he's blessing his children, he says, Yisachar Chamor Gorem, which we usually translate as that's the totem of the tribe of Yisachar, is the donkey. The donkey that bears this heavy load. And it's true that the tribe of Yisachar, they bore the heavy load of the Torah and the responsibility of it. But you could also read it as Chamor Gorem. It was caused by the donkey, because the donkey started to cry. And we're going to find that this also is important to us later when we're talking about Rabbi Akiba and the 50 gates of Bina, the 50 Chamishim Shari Bina. Let's bring it back here. So the moon fixing the calendar is basically, we have a lunar calendar, and so the fixing is the idea of the moon. And the moon is associated with a woman whose body is, the clock is the moon, which is the Sephira of Bina, which is a primal feminine Sephira. As we said, that the two Sephiras of Chochmah and Bina are like a man and a woman, the train rain Dulomis Parash, and the two lovers that can never be separated. And when Leah comes and deflects Yaakov and tells him that she's coming, that he's coming to her that night, then she is asking him for a mitzvah. And the Gemara says that somebody who can, a woman who can talk her husband into a mitzvah, is going to have children that even you couldn't find such children in the time of Moshe. Right? Because Moshe said, Moshe's father-in-law said to him, go find people who are chachamim, who are nevonim, who have chochmah and bina, and who really understand stuff, and set them up as judges and so on, magistrates. But when it comes to it, if you read the Torah, it says he found chachamim, he didn't find nevonim, he didn't find people who really understood bina. Right? So, when Leah deflected Yaakov and brought him to her tent, she has children. She has Yisachar, who has this tremendous gift of Bina. And so, a woman who knows how to get her husband to do a mitzvah, meaning a woman who knows how to seduce her husband, can really bring into this world another level of Bina. So, she'll have children that even in the time of Moses, they couldn't be found. So, why Dafka Moshe? Because Moshe, his name is Min Amayim Shisu, I have drawn him from the water. And as we've said many times, water is a metaphor for desire and longing. So, those children who have gifts that even in the time of Moshe were not available are rabbis, are sages, who have the gift of knowing when to have longing and desire. And that's the secret hidden in that Gemara. So we've said that Chochmah is knowing that there is a future. Bina is understanding the concept of time per se. So then Das, the Sefer of Das, who Hergesh, that's the feeling, Sheyesh Zman, that there is such a thing as time, Vuhu Achshav, and it's now. You see, one of our gifts as human beings is that we are actually capable of not being in the now. Of course, mostly for us it's a problem when spiritually, also physically, and intellectually and emotionally we're not in now, right? Many of us have one leg in the past and one leg in the future, in which case, right, what are you doing on now? Some of the greatest spiritual practitioners in the world, they just advocate being here now. That in itself is a major spiritual practice. Das is knowing an awareness that you're being followed by your past and that you're being met by your future, but that you are in now. And that feeling of being in the moment, that's the experience of Das. That you're not in the past, and therefore you're not in regret, and you're not in acceptance, you're not in resentment, you're not in the future, you're not in fear or faith, that you are in now, which could be anger or love, but it's the feeling of now. Right? It's an important place to be. And you can only be it when you're intellectually big enough to understand what the opposites are. And therefore, the word das, pirish das k'moy da'es, the word das, which means knowledge, can then be made of two words, da'es, no time. So then, when the Mishnah says, havein b'chochmah, understand with chochmah, understand with wisdom, means to experience Das like Shemetzapa Sheharega Achshav Timshech Lo'el Me'ad. If you really if you really are in the now, then you can actually experience the now as an infinite moment. Right? A perfect moment, they say, goes on forever, right? A perfect moment is infinite, right? You can experience that if you really develop this spiritual practice around time. And that's the meaning of Havein b'chokhmah. Understand with wisdom. The next command is Chacham b'bino. Be wise with understanding. What does it mean? We learn in the Medrash. The Medrash says, okay, so let's have a definition. We use these terms, Chacham, Mevin, Chacham b'bino. Like, give me a practical example. Give me something metaphoric that I can use as a handle with which to understand the distinction between these two, Chacham b'bino. So the Medrash gives an example which I guess these rabbis, they had a sense of humor, you know, because it doesn't really lock it up, is there? What does it say? He says, imagine you've got this shulchani. A shulchan is a bench, table. Our modern world, it's a banker, right? In the olden times, bankers didn't just lend money, but bankers would actually tell you what your money's worth, because most money was bits of precious or semi-precious metals. And, you know, people's currency, you know, and a city might issue a currency based on its assets that, you know, people would trade in currency as they would trade in assets in the ancient world. And so part of the banker's job was to tell you Thracian dollar is worth this week, right? Because if they had a bad harvest, then you could get wiped out if you were holding too many Thracian dollars, and so on. And so all the city-states that issued currency, you know, very few of them actually had the precious metal content that its, you know, the face value was, and so it depended on the banker's knowledge as to how much. So it was quite a trick to be a banker, which of course could then leave you with a broken bank and you were bankrupt, and so on. So here you've got a banker whose job it is to assay the value of money. So, you have a banker who is very rich, meaning he's got assets of his own, and he's in this for, I guess, for the fun of it. So when people bring him money, Roya, he looks at the money, and he values it and assesses it, and tells them how to invest it, right? Shane Mavim, when they don't bring him money, Yoshev V'toyah, he sits doing nothing. Novoin. So, the Chacham is like this rich banker. The Novoin, the one with Bino, Doime L'Shulchani Tagi, he's like a merchant banker who, if he doesn't do business, you know, he doesn't eat, right? K'she'ein Mevim Loi Lirois, when they don't bring him money to assay and for his advice, Mevim Shaloi, so he starts to bring out his own money. So he'll sit there with his own money figuring out what it's worth and how best to invest it and so on. That's the Medrash. And that's supposed to tell us what's the difference between Chochma and Bina, which I guess maybe a couple of thousand years ago that was like really hot advice. But how do we interpret it today? Shehachochem b'bina, the idea of somebody who is wise with understanding is like somebody who is rich with poverty. The Chochem is rich, the Novoin is poor, so Chacham b'bina means be rich with poverty, which means It's not to experience the time that you're in, right? We said previously, we ended by saying that to be mevin b'chokhma means to experience the time that you are in right now as being the infinite moment, right? So chacham b'bina is the opposite. It's not to experience the moment that you're in right now. But to know in your mind that the experience of time is an illusion altogether, that you have only the past and the future, that the now doesn't even exist, that the confluence of the past and the future are somehow the line that you are on, that there is no mark on the line to say where you are. All there is the future in front of you and the past behind you, and that you are in flux, that there is no present moment. The idea of the present moment is an illusion. You are always moving forward and you are always moving away from what is behind you. And you can't stay in this moment. Even it's not even a real thing, the moment. And that you can't... The whole idea that this present moment is an illusion, that's another spiritual practice. And that you can't really drill down into the moment because it's already gone. That's the idea of Chacham Bibin. So we have to be in both. We have to be able to experience the moment we're in as being eternal, that the past and the future are illusions, and that we are in the now. And at the same time, we have to be able to see that, and the present moment doesn't exist. So then the Mishnah says, B'choin bohem. So usually, we understand Bechina as a kind of test. You know, that you can test your reality, that you can use your the tools that you have as a probe to check reality against. Right? I want to say that the B'choin here means to build. It's a fortress or a citadel, as I quote the pasuk from Yirmiyahu here, that God says, "Bochon nesatich ba'ami, I have made you a bochon in my people, miftza, like a citadel. V'teida, and I want you to know. U'bochanto es darcham, and I want you to try and discern their way." So the pasuk there in Yirmiyahu uses the word bochon, that it means a watchtower or a great big building from which you have the eagle eye view. So it also means a building, right? A physical structure on which you're standing. Not like an eagle that's flying in the sky, but you have a physical place to stand on. So that's the meaning of B'choin B'hem. And also then you are then given the gift of being able to look down and have a bird's eye view on everything. Rashi says, B'choin, the word B'choin is Loshen Choizek. It's an expression of power. K'moy Oifel U'B'chan. Hekimu B'chunov, stand up all ye mighty ones. So the word B'chun actually means power. U'Pirish, so then when the Mishnah tells us B'choin B'hem, it means use the Bina, the understanding of your heart, to build an edifice from which your worldview will spring. And so using these ideas of time, that contradictory ideas of time, you can build a powerful place from which to look out at your world and extrapolate from there. And then it says, V'chakoyr mehem, chakira. I once, when we were students in the yeshiva, I was young, so the Rebbe was using the idea of chakira, right? Especially in Lithuanian yeshivas, the chakira was an important tool in understanding the Gemara. And so there was a definition we used to use of what is a chakira. I mean, the idea of a chakira, the question is, what makes the coffee sweet? Is it the sugar or is it the spoon? Well, if you put the sugar in and you don't stir, then it doesn't make the coffee sweet. So it must be the spoon that makes the coffee sweet. Oh no, because if you don't put sugar in and you just stir, then you won't get sweet. Ah, but then maybe it's not the sugar that makes it sweet, but it's if you don't have the sugar in, then you don't know how long to stir, because you have to stir until the sugar dissolves, and that tells you that you stirred enough. These were chakira ideas. The idea that you can use bits of information to pry open, I guess, what we would call today scientific thinking. So the word chakoyr appears in the book of Job. It says, "Hacheke eloika timtsa." Can you find a way of scrutinizing, of investigating the nature, the essence? Can you investigate God? No. We say in the Tehillim, in the Ashrei prayer, "V'ligidulo soy," into God's glory, "Ein cheker." There is no You can't get there. You can't understand it. You can't pull it apart and examine what it's made of. So, v'chakor mehem, when the Mishnah tells us, I want you to use these tools to scrutinize from them and work outwards from this building that you build when you really understand the nature of time and how time manifests in yourself. And then, timtzemir goy l'nafshecha. That is a great way, a very satisfying way of finding serenity inside yourself. And through that, you can actually get close to God. And as we're going to explain further on, that becoming aware of how time is passing in you and how you are passing through time is a really powerful tool for coming to an awareness of God. V'ha meid dovo al boirov. Stand everything on its clarity, on its verity, on its truth. And you know, here we have the word boir, which is the root of the word bris. As we said in the first Mishnah, the idea of bar, of clarity, the second Mishnah, baru lechem ish, Goliath says to the Jewish people, pick yourself out, choose somebody who's going to be your champion, you know, and send him out. And this is the idea of bris, that there's a choice. Because there was other ideas of bris also, that it's something that has existed forever, connected to the word bereshit bara. So the Mishnah says, if you can use the tools of understanding time, then you can stand things on, I guess, the truth, on clarity. I've used the word verity from the Latin word for truth. And this idea of standing something on its truth, establishing where the reality of a thing lies, that is the meaning of the Sefirah of Das. So, I bring a quote from the book HaKitav HaKabbalah, which is a commentary on the Torah. And he says there, he brings the word boir, and he says it's not such a simple word as truth. There are other levels of meaning. And he brings a psiche from Eichor Rabosi. In the Book of Lamentations, there's some very, really beautiful medrash on it, really profound. We have a member here of our class, Dr. Julian Unger, who's really specialist, who really understands this medrash. And he's opened my eyes to some of the really beautiful ideas that are there, which are really rabbis trying to grasp, trying to deal with the idea of all the bad things that happen in the world. And, you know, where can we find a congruence? And how can we make God fit into this picture of basically a world that just goes from bad to worse, right? And so they deal with many of the ideas that they can't really just talk about in the open, and metaphors. So one of the things it talks about there, it brings a verse from the Book of Lamentations. It says, Zechor es boirecho, remember your Creator, v'imei bachrusecho, in the days of your youth. And that's how we usually translate that verse. The Medrash goes to town. It says, Ad shebachruseichem kayemes, while your youth still exists, Ad shebris kuhuna kayemes, while you still have the priesthood, covenant of priesthood. Remember your Creator. So from those two words, bimei bachurusecho, from the days of your youth, zechor es boirecho, remember your Creator. But they're playing with this idea of boirecho, your Creator, to have the word boir in it, which we said is connected to the word bris. So it's written by the tribe of Levi, it says, "Ubechoyr oisim mikol shifte Yisroel," choose him. But the word "bechoyr" there could also mean youth, that the tribe, the priests are like the young, the chosen, the eternal youth of Israel. And in fact, one of the things that really disqualified a priest from doing his service was like signs of old age, and that the Kohanim and the Levites who served, there was a very short period, like the Levites were only from the age of 30 through 50, that they actually did their service, and the Kohanim, they could serve when they were older or younger, but they had to like really have really their youth. In fact, some of the Kohanim, the high priests, did their work right until the end of their life. Some of them lived to be 120, but they never lost the spring in their step. So there is a verse in the Torah that says, "Ubechoyr oisim mikol shifte Yisrael," choose him, and that word chosenness there also has the connotation of youth. Shemavu medivrei Chazal, Shabir Hashem Bris, and this is still the quote from the Ksav Kabbalah. The meaning, to understand the name Bris, covenant, is Doime Mamish Leinin Bechira. It's like something chosen, V'haflaga, something set aside. V'ha'amodas Dova Al Boirov, so then when we talk in our Mishnah, so this is using that quote, when we talk in our Mishnah, setting something on its Boirov, it's also setting something on its chosenness, which is connected with the Sefirah of Das. And so because our Mishnah has told us to have wisdom with understanding and to have understanding with wisdom, so now he's going to tell us, and the way to do that, the way to synthesize these two ideas of being in the moment and there being no moment, is to actually be in Das. Because when the two spheres of Chochmah and Bina are functioning together, then they are like Abba and Ima, the father and mother, the true lovers who cannot be separated. Like the male is Chochmah and the female is Bina, but not separate. They're working together in a way that they can't be separated. And in the Kabbalah, there's no difference between the physical connection of male and female and the spiritual and the intellectual and the emotional, that they all have the same kind of value in existence. And that connection, when they are working together, they are in Das, as we learned in Mishnah 2. We talked there about the similarity or the mirror image of the bris between the two 10 fingers of the toes and 10 fingers of the arms in the bris of the flesh and the bris of the tongue. These are both mediums of connection, that we connect to people with our words and we connect to people with our genitals. And that there is a bris, there's a covenant that's cut for both of them, because they are both the means of connection. What does that mean here? So, if we stop for a moment and we think, what happens when a person speaks? Mila hayoytze mipi Reuven, a word comes out of Reuven's mouth and goes into Shimon's ears, right? So then, the meaning that is carried by that word then connects Shimon's heart to Reuven, right? Reuven, let's say, says to Shimon, "I love you." Those words come out of Reuven's mouth, they're just sounds, right? They're just air waves. They go into the tympanic drum of Shimon's ear, and they bing, 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 and then Shimon gets a message in his mind. He hears Reuven say, "Shimon, I love you," right? At that moment, Shimon's heart, his mind, his knowledge is changed, because Reuven is telling him, "I love you," right? At a certain moment, the sound does its work. If you had some kind of instrument on Shimon's head, you could maybe watch that moment in an electrical impulse. But there's a moment where it happens for Shimon, a dawning, a realization, of what Reuven has said. So there's a change that happens in Shimon, in his mind, in his brain, in his heart, in his emotions, in his endocrinal system. Everything changes when he hears those words. And now he's a new person. That change, that's the moment of knowing between the two of them. So that moment, we can't really hold on to that moment of, I mean, we can hold on to the feeling of being loved, right? But that moment of change where somebody says something, comes into my ear, and then it bang, it's a new world, that is like a very fleeting thing, right? Then it's gone. Because the idea is very much like an orgasm, right? The idea of das, of knowing, right? It's there and then it's past, right? It doesn't have duration, it doesn't have continuity, it just doesn't go on and on. It happens, right? And then it's finished. And that is the Hamid Dov al Boirov. That is when you use these two concepts of time, the idea that you are in an infinite moment that is going on, and also at the same time to be able to live in the knowledge there is no such thing as the moment, that we are in flux. If you can synthesize those two, you can create the ground in which the word, the connection, is really made. And then you can be in that truth, which is Lahamid of Al-Boyrov, to put the thing on its real place. And then he says, V'hoshev yoitza al-mechoinoi, sit the Creator on his base. V'hoshev, what does it mean to sit? To bring God down, so to speak, from the upper world to the lower world. That's the meaning of sitting. So when you sit down, it means you go from being upstanding to going to being in a sitting state, which is like you lower yourself. So when we make God sit, then we are making room for God in the world below the one that he was in. God is everywhere. What does that mean? You know, at the Song of the Sea, it says, we said to God, until you made war with the Egyptians here and brought us through the Red Sea, you were king of the world, right? But we, now, we've made you Asinucha Augustus. We've made you into an Augustus, which was, in the time of the Medrash, that was the word for emperor, right? Because the first one who crowned himself as a god was Augustus Caesar, right? But what it really means is an emperor is not just king of one country, but king of many countries, king over kings, right? And the Medrash continues, Kovoid ben Hamelech l'Augustus. So what is the difference in honor between a king and an emperor? Hamelech oimed al aluach v'Augustus yoshev. And coming from England, I remember the pictures of Queen Victoria. And Queen Victoria, she was considered an empress, and she's always depicted sitting down, whereas other kings were depicted standing up, and apparently this is a heraldic device to tell you that the king is king over other kings, right? And Queen Victoria was Empress of India and so on, and she had kings that were her vassals, so to speak. And so that's the Indian of the, that's the meaning. We say to God, you know, up until now you were just king, but we've made you emperor. And the consequence of being made emperor is that God now sits, which means that God is actually king of a lower world. Or that the lower world is now made up of kings. There's different ways of looking at that. So when we talk about bringing God to sit, we mean bringing the divine into this world, into our world. Yoitzer, so God is referred to not as Boira, not as the creator, right, but as the Yoitzer. You know, we're learning Sefer Yetzirah, and we've said that the whole idea of Yetzer is connected to the idea of desire, like Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. So that's the whole meaning of the Sefer Yetzirah, is to explain how this Ratzon HaPashut, the simple desire, which is a Yetzer, has evolved from above and has become this physical world that we inhabit. Because from the simple desire, which we call the Ratzon HaPashut, we have this stream of the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Ra that we'll be encountering in the next Mishnah. And the Nekuda Shel HaKol Nishan, and so the point on which everything depends, it's like almost like the hinge, the fulcrum on which everything moves, is the Sefira of Das. That's the point. And even though the Sefira of Das, we keep on coming back to it again and again, it isn't a real Sefira, because God isn't really interested in, you know, getting his rocks off and you know, having satisfaction of the desire and having the desire fulfilled, right? God is really interested in us. Nevertheless, it keeps on coming back to this idea of the Das, that moment in which everything becomes real and then it passes. So the Mishnah is telling us that Das is Keter, but it's Keter that keeps on coming down and in a like alternating current, right? Moti v'loi moti, touches but it doesn't touch. Keter is always remains unfulfilled, and yet it's always just about to be fulfilled. She'olam ha'yitzira, because this world of Yitzira, the world of desires, is where the simple desire of God spreads and evolves and becomes this world that we inhabit, which we experience as our own desire. We're going to see in the next chapter in Mishnah 5, we'll be talking about this at greater length. It's now 9:05. I guess we'll stop here and